Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. From the University of California, Davis, can eating mangoes reduce women's facial wrinkles? Well, according to them, like other orange fruits and vegetables, which are rich in beta-carotene and provide antioxidants that may delay cell damage, a new study from researchers at the University of California finds eating mangoes, also known as champagne mangoes or honey mangoes, may have another benefit, reducing facial wrinkles in older women with fairer skin. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients. Postmenopausal women who ate a half a cup of, and let me spell this for you, it's a specific type of mango, A-T-A-U-L-F-O, A-T-A-U-L-F-O, four times a week, saw a 23% decrease in deep wrinkles after just 60 days, and a 20% decrease after 4 months. That's a tremendous improvement in wrinkles. Wow. So, something that simple, that inexpensive, and that easy. That's why mango is one of what we call a functional food. It functions in unique ways in the body. And anyhow, that's the latest study, but we have a lot more. Certain CBD oils are no better than pure CBD at inhibiting certain cancer cell lines, Penn State University. More on that and a lot more on health and healing. But today's primary emphasis begins a week of discussing in depth what is approaching in the next 4 weeks, which will be a worldwide campaign to convince everyone that they should line up, roll up their arm, sleeves, and get the injections of whichever coronavirus vaccine is available in a given country. In fact, as you will see, they're now starting whole campaigns to attack anyone who suggests that maybe that vaccine, which is experimental, an RNA vaccine, which has never been used in history, in effect, that vaccine has the capacity to reprogram your own DNA to create antibodies. But there's a lot of questions I and others have on this. What about people who already have autoimmune conditions? That's probably 100 million people in the United States alone. Could that then cause the reprogramming so the body begins to attack itself in the process of trying to protect itself? There's so many unanswered questions, and they only used healthy people in their study. In an AstraZeneca study, or Pfizer study, at the higher level, 100% had side effects. Since when would we allow any product to go on the market where 100% of the people taking it ended up with side effects and some severe, including hospitalization? I think this is the most irresponsible, unscientific public health policy in world history, simply because the number of people who are going to be involved in this. And yet, people are just saying, yes, give it to me. Okay, you'll get it. And by the way, thank goodness for the people of Denmark. The parliament in Denmark last week was about to pass a law that would have mandated the police can come into your home, forcibly restrain you, and inject you with the vaccine. The people said, no, you're not, and went to the streets. For 13 days, they protested till the law was shelved. They're doing the same thing. They're fighting back in Germany, in Italy, in Spain, but not in the United States, not in Great Britain, and not in Australia. So we're going to discuss this in different ways. And I'm going to be sharing an article tomorrow that should put everything into perspective. Please read the article. If you agree with it, share it with others. Every statement in that article will come from mainstream peer-reviewed science. It's just not science you're being told about. But today we have an exclusive. Dr. John Martin, MD, PhD. More reasons to be worried about the mRNA COVID vaccine. Stealth adapted viruses. If you don't know what that is, don't be concerned, because 99% of scientists and physicians don't know what that is. And by the way, if you think he's someone who just has an opinion, no. Dr. Martin is the medical director of the nonprofit public charity MI Hope in California. He holds a medical degree and a doctorate degree in specializing in immunopathology and medical microbiology. Earlier in his career, Dr. Martin worked for the National Institutes of Health and later for the FDA, where he headed the viral oncology laboratory. His work at the FDA involved investigating possible contamination in vaccines with cancer-causing viruses. For the past 30 years, he has been conducting research into the detection of stealth-adapted viruses that are not recognized by our body's immune system. So today, in an exclusive, and you should really tell everyone you know to listen in today, we will share his research into these viruses and the role they may play in increasing the risks of the new generation of COVID-19 RNA vaccines that will be launched shortly. Do any of you in the audience remember back in 1975, I had Dr. Eva Sneed, I believe she was from San Antonio, Texas, on, where she was the first to discuss stealth viruses, including SV40, simian virus 40, that 100 million Americans received in vaccines, including the polio vaccine. And we were never told that at that time they knew it caused cancer. The developer of the vaccine had proof it caused cancer. We played you the tape of him, the video. It was shot near his death. He was the undisputed high priest of all vaccinology in the United States. He created more vaccines for Merck than any other scientist in history. And yet there he is acknowledging this thing caused cancer. Why didn't that stop the vaccine? Why weren't we warned? Why did it take decades to find out that we had all been exposed? I'll ask Dr. John Martin that today. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing, because there's always something positive there, something we can do. Now, according to Penn State University, the cannabidiol, diol, these are the oils. They're equally or less effective at inhibiting the growth of certain cancer cells compared to pure CBD. And the results of this recent study indicate that further research into the clinical applications of the CBDs should include an analysis of whether the pure cannabinoid compound or intact plant material is more effective at achieving the therapeutic effect. So the researchers evaluated whether CBD oils were better than pure CBD at inhibiting the growth of different cancer cell lines. They studied brain, skin, and colorectal cancers using two cell lines for each cancer type and found that pure CBD was able to reduce cell viability in 3 of the 6 cell lines tested, and that the effect was cell line specific and not specific to select cancers. None of the CBD oils tested were able to reduce the viability to a greater extent than the pure CBD. So something for us to think about. This was published in Medical Cannabis and Cannabinoids. Also today, from Tel Aviv University, a study finds hyperbaric oxygen treatments reverse the aging process. We've been telling you that for decades. It also helps if you've just had a stroke, to limit the damage from that stroke. In fact, if you've had a stroke in the past 5 years, it can also help. This is the first clinical trial that reverses two biological processes associated with aging in human cells. This is a new study. It was also at the Shamir Medical Center in Israel, and it indicates that hyperbaric oxygen treatments in healthy aging adults can stop the aging of blood cells and reverse the aging process. In the biological sense, the adult's blood cells actually grow younger as the treatment progresses. The researchers found that a unique protocol of treatments with high-pressure oxygen in a pressure chamber can reverse two major processes associated with aging and its illnesses. the shortening of telomeres. Those are the protected regions located at both ends of each chromosome, and the accumulation of old malfunctioning cells in the body. So focusing on immune cells containing DNA obtained from the participant's blood, the study discovered a lengthening of up to 38% of the telomeres, as well as a decrease of up to 37% in the presence of senescent cells, meaning older and dying cells. The study was led by Professor Efrati of the Shackler School of Medicine and the Segal School of Neuroscience. So this was good. The clinical trial was conducted as part of a comprehensive Israeli research program that targets aging as a reversible condition. The paper was published in the current issue of Aging. So for many years, the team has been engaged in hyperbaric research and therapy treatments based on protocols of exposure of high-pressure oxygen at various concentrations inside a pressure chamber. And it shows that it helps, quote, this is from the study itself. Our achievements over the years included the improvement of brain functions damaged by age, stroke, and brain injury. That's terrific. So for healthy people, if you want to slow down the aging process and increase your telomeres at the end of the chromosomes by 20 to 38% for the different cell types, that is phenomenal. So something new. Also, you've heard me mention many times that one of the proven, and there's no controversy on this anywhere in science, the proven methods of lengthening your lifespan is to engage in caloric restriction to what your body actually needs. That's why, for example, in our anti-aging studies, and we've done three this year. We have one more to do in the last 2 weeks of April. But we fast starting about 6 o'clock at night until about 9 the next morning, about 15 hours. And then on Saturday and Sundays, it's principally taking in liquids. All the nutrition came in liquid form. And people just feel so rejuvenated, so cleansed, detoxified. This is from the Bangladesh Agricultural University, as well as the Korean Institute of Science and Technology, as well as the Chung Ang University. Three separate universities, they found that intermittent fasting is a possible priming tool for the host defense against SARS-2 infection. And that's because of crosstalk among calorie restriction, autophagy, and immune response. Now, you've heard us mention the diet, a healthy diet, plant-based diet, organic wherever possible, nutrients that are in the peer-reviewed literature, thousands of studies in PubMed that we have cited, such as vitamin D, but at higher doses, vitamin C at higher doses, zinc, certainly vitamin A from beta carotene. Those are your four big ones. Then the herbs would be astragalus, olive leaf extract. Those would be your two most important ones. That strengthens your immune system. That means that even if you're an older person in chronological age, as long as you're healthy, your body has the capability of destroying the virus. If you look carefully at all the studies, you'll find that the one common denominator in people who manifest the symptoms and then go on to be hospitalized or die, at least 90% minimally, are people with multiple comorbidities. And guess which comorbidity is right at the top of the list of making you more susceptible to dying from COVID? Obesity. And we are the most obese nation per population in the world. But we also have other comorbidities. High blood pressure, congestive heart failure, cancers, emphysema, and dementia. So wouldn't it make sense, just reason and common sense, that we put our emphasis upon keeping people healthy with a national health program? I believe it would be. And wouldn't it make sense that we start using these therapies along with those drugs that are shown to be most beneficial in a person who is infected? Yes. Hyperbaric, ozone, vitamin C. These are shown to work. But the doctors using them have all been warned by the FDA, don't talk about this, take down links. That shows you what happens when something is politicized and then weaponized. But here's our three universities. Why? Because severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus 2, SARS 2, is a causative pathogen of deadly coronavirus 19. It has emerged as a major threat to public health across the world. Although there's no clear gender or socioeconomic discrimination in the incidence of COVID-19, until you look carefully. For example, down in Mississippi and Louisiana, you have two of the poorest states with the worst health outcomes in America. You're looking at the highest mortality rate, the shortest lifespans, the greatest amount of poverty, and then poor diets. So as a result, being a minority person or even a Caucasian person who is poor, the likelihood of you having a poor diet and suffering from these comorbidities without coronavirus, without any viruses, you're going to die sooner, you're going to be hospitalized more often, and of the millions of people who die each year in the United States, those are the people that make that up. It is very rare for health-minded people just to die before their lifespan is at the end of that lifespan, and not a single penny is being spent or a scientific paper published on any of this. So shouldn't we be concerned about going into poor neighborhoods and supplying them with the absolute best food and help subsidize that for them and the supplements? What if every doctor told their patients, unless there's a reason not to, here is a preventative package that you should take each day. Here are the juices you should drink. Healthy juices, tomato juice, and orange juice, grapefruit juice, you know, and apple juice. But not these high-sugared drinks. But we're not doing that. Everything is the vaccine and a drug. And the drug has been shown, even the World Health Organization withdrew its support for using this drug. And yet it still made $700 million for the company Moderna. And it doesn't work. And there are side effects. But the drug that does work, hydroxychloroquine, guess what we found when we looked at the actual peer-reviewed studies? We found over 107 peer-reviewed studies that it works. So, interesting, what really works is inexpensive and saves your life. We are condemning. What doesn't work, we're promoting. We've got all this upside down. In any case, one more thing on the health side of this is that, so we know that we have to fast, at least don't eat at night, all right, unless you work at night, but make sure that you're eating only what your body is benefiting from. That's very important. So intermittent fasting works. And finally, from the University of Seville, the wild olive diet reduces oxidative stress at the retinal level, and it also helps diminish hypertension to a greater degree than extra virgin olive oil. Yeah, let me spell this for you. Acebuncin, A-C-E-B-U-C-H-I-N. That's an oil from that's used in the diet. It reduces arterial blood pressure, as shown by a study carried out at the Cardiovascular Psychopathology Research Group at the Physiology Department at the University of Seville. Furthermore, their work shows that the oil from this olive has a greater impact in reducing hypertension than extra virgin olive oil. This research group was also benefited by the U.S. Faculty of Pharmacy, led by Professor Carmen Coutillo, together with another professor, and they've been on this for over 20 years. So, just when you thought knew everything, suddenly we find about the acebuchi, also known as the wild olive tree, is a variety of tree widely found throughout Spain and covering most, about 9 million hectares in one area. And little research was done on it. Now, when they're doing research, they're finding it's a phenomenal oil that comes from it. So we're giving you a heads up that good stuff is out there. And by the way, social distancing is increasing loneliness in older adults. This is from the University of Stirling in Scotland. So social distancing introduced in response to COVID-19 is increasing feelings of loneliness in Scotland's older population and impacting their well-being. Why aren't we taking a look at what happens when people who need to be around people for their well-being are excluded, isolated? We also have ageism. We have a big discriminatory issue going on where people have historically been discriminated based upon their age. But now this is really putting they're taking all older people, and suddenly these people don't have the same social networks as younger people. They're not always as computer savvy as younger people. And they're suffering from severe mental and physical problems, including suicide increasing in a group that historically that wasn't a problem. Now it is a problem. We'll deal with social distancing on our report tomorrow to show you what the actual science shows. Oh, and by the way, from University of Rovira in Italy, a diet rich in the ultra-processed fats, that's your French fries, that's your pretzels, that's your potato chips, a lot of breads, and sugars increase the possibility of muscle pain. So one more reason not to be eating all that. And Brigham and Women's Hospital says that vitamin D supplement can reduce the risk of developing advanced cancer. That's good news. All right, that helps everybody. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 22 minutes into our program. We're going to go now to Dr. John Martin. I gave you his biography earlier in the program. Our discussion will be about more reasons to be worried about the RNA COVID vaccines and the stealth-adapted viruses. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary.
This is an exclusive interview because even within the community of vaccine critics, there's little to no attention or reference that we could find made to stealth-adapted viruses. What they are and how do they arise? Where do they come from? And what are the risks they present? And what is their relationship if you get a vaccine? The current schedule of vaccines, over 72 different vaccines like the MMR and Gardasil that are mandated like in California, New York. But what about this new virus vaccine, antivirus vaccine? Two companies, Moderna and Pfizer, they seem to be similar. And yet all you hear in the headlines is 94.5% success, 95% success, and then the public relations. But that's not science. We have yet to determine the science before publishing a scientific peer-reviewed literature on this so people can see what they went through, how many healthy people, how many sick people, how many people with different autoimmune conditions were in the study. None of that. We go right from public relations to profiteering to the head of Pfizer selling almost $6 million of stock in the company, a pump and dump. But at the bottom of this, we don't know what's going to happen when that virus, antivirus vaccine goes into our body, especially if we already have stealth viruses. So that's the larger overview I would like for you to address, if you would. So what are they referring to as being adapted viruses? How are they related then to vaccination? The form is yours. Take your time.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. Look, as you said earlier, there is an enormous momentum to rapidly approve two types of COVID-19 vaccines. The first type, made by Pfizer and Moderna, uses the modified messenger RNA coding for the spike protein of the COVID-19 vaccine. The second type, developed by AstraZeneca and by Johnson & Johnson, adds the DNA coding for this spike protein to adenoviruses, which are not expected to grow in the humans inoculated with this adenovirus vaccine. My concern is that without some more public awareness of stealth-adapted viruses, the FDA approving committees will not consider the safety, these viruses, as a safety risk in the widespread use of the vaccines. Now, I can describe for you the process of stealth adaptation, and this has come from research over the last 30 odd years. It involves two processes. The first is the removal of certain genes, including those which act as the targets for the cell immune response. So these viruses no longer trigger inflammation, the usual hallmark of an infectious illness. But the second change is the addition of added sequences to the self-adapted virus. This probably occurs with the added sequences cross-linking residual fragments of the stealth-adapted virus. The added sequences can come from the cellular RNA, from RNA of other viruses, and even RNA from some bacteria. The RNA is incorporated, it can be converted back to DNA, it can undergo further mutations, and it can be, these sequences can continually be exchanged with other sequences in the infected cells. Now, this has totally altered my concept of viruses. It also confirmed what I realized many years ago, that the most reliable way of detecting stealth-adapted viruses is by viral cultures followed by DNA and RNA sequencing. So that's the background. And what I believe is that these viruses may also capture the messenger RNA coding for the coded COVID in the COVID-19 vaccines. This would make the incorporated sequences infectious. This could have devastating metabolic and autoimmune consequences for the person and also for anyone subsequently infected with these modified stealth-adapted viruses. Now, the difficulty in having this potential risk considered is that public health authorities are refusing to acknowledge the existence of stealth-adapted viruses. This is mainly because certain of these viruses came from the viruses that infected the monkeys to use to make polio vaccines. I've published data showing that certain stealth-adapted viruses have carried monkey cellular sequences into humans. This is almost like a type of reverse evolution. So the bottom line is that the issue of stealth-adapted viruses potentially capturing the COVID-19 S-protein-coding mRNA should certainly be discussed by those reviewing the safety of the vaccines. Every indication I have is that this topic will not be addressed.
Explain deeper, if you would, but in lay language, the stealth viruses come from where? You mentioned the polio vaccine. Well, we know that the SV40 virus came from the polio vaccine, and we were not informed of it, even though they realized it, because the man who developed that vaccine, Dr. Hillman, said it. He said it in an interview near the end of his life, a filmed interview. We've played that interview where, yeah, it caused cancer, and yet the public was not informed about it. And it was only decades later. Could you
transcribe that interview for Leonard Horwitz from information that's still in the repository of the National Library of Medicine? But to go back to the idea of the polio vaccine, and it is interesting because it alerted, at least myself, to the existence of these stealth-adapted viruses. What had happened was people began to use rhesus monkeys to begin with, and taking the kidneys from the monkeys, culturing the kidneys in test tubes, adding the polio virus, and inactivating it with formaldehyde. Even then, though, it was realized by several pioneering people, Bernice Eddy and others, that there were residual living viruses in the polio vaccine made from rhesus monkeys. This turned out to be a virus called simian virus 40. The switch was then made to African green monkeys. When I first characterized what was a virus from a patient with a chronic fatigue syndrome and another patient with a bipolar mental illness, this virus had residual sequences of African green monkey cytomegalovirus. And this was something, again, that was hidden from public view. In 1972, a study was conducted where 11 monkeys were set aside from making polio vaccine just to see if the cultured kidneys would grow out any other type of virus. All 11 kidney cultures grew out African green monkey simian cytomegalovirus. This information was never made public and was dismissed on the basis that there had been a decade of using this vaccine and nobody apparently had come down with a cytomegalovirus illness. What was not realized until we isolated some viruses from a chronic fatigue patient and the bipolar patient, that the virus had undergone changes. The African green monkey simian cytomegalovirus had lost a lot of its genes, but it had incorporated bacterial sequences and other sequences from the cell. We then saw other viruses, including viruses that had picked up rhesus monkey cellular sequences and isolated those. So the description now is that the stealth adapted viruses not only allow the viruses to evade the immune system and therefore are not readily detected by pathologists looking for inflammation, but they can also act as carriers of additional cellular sequences. So that's a significant concern that should be addressed. I will mention just on the side that there's also concern with the adenovirus vaccines, because there are stealth, we've had evidence for stealth adapted adenoviruses. And if these were present, they could enable the adenovirus vaccines to reacquire the ability to grow in patients. So there's a basis of concern. The difficulty essentially is the reluctance of the public health authorities to open up this topic of stealth adapted viruses in terms of the safety of these vaccines. And my sense of that, they will only do so if there's sufficient public awareness of these stealth adapted viruses. And that's why it's a real privilege to come on your show and inform people these viruses exist. There's extensive DNA sequence data on African green monkey derived self-adapted viruses. And there's also published data on rhesus cellular sequences coming into some of the viruses isolated from patients with a chronic fatigue syndrome.
Are these stable viruses, or are they highly reactive to other genetic material that would either incorporate other genetic sequences or increase the chances of mutating, since we already know that the COVID-19 mutates? There have been several different mutation strains occurring around the world, including in the United States. So how in the world can you say that everyone should have a one-size-fits-all vaccine when the virus itself is mutating? And wouldn't that put it in a similar situation to other, let's say, annual respiratory viruses, influenza viruses, that we don't have a single vaccine for all of these because they mutate? It's all guesswork every year which virus is going to manifest this year. And that's why there's such a low, a low success rate. And even that is a flawed model, because let's say if you give 100 million people in the United States a flu vaccine and 90% don't develop the flu, you give 100% of the credit to the vaccine. Well, that's completely unscientific because there are many different factors that can contribute to a person not getting the flu in a given year, where they live, seasonal variations in temperature, the amount of nutrients, the quality of their diet, comorbidities, their age, etc. None of that is considered. If you don't get the flu, the vaccine got the credit. That to me is just the worst form of epidemiology that is promoted for why you need the flu vaccine. And could that not also be the case coming up with COVID? They have a vaccine. They're claiming that it has success, but they're not telling us, were these healthy individuals? Because 90% of the people you're going to give it to are not healthy. And and couldn't that cause additional problems if you have stealth viruses that the body has no immune response to, but the virus, the stealth virus, does have a response to the new viruses that you're putting into its body? Could you address these, please?
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. And even just to go back to a more basic one, and then I'll come back to that. There's every reason to think that the COVID-19 vaccine, or the COVID-19 virus itself, can undergo stealth adaptation. And this could be one of the explanations for the long COVID-19 illness that's affecting a number of people. So the concept of stealth adaptation adds a total new thinking about viruses and should be looked at. But the other explanation is that the immune stimulation from the adjuvants in the vaccines can trigger cellular immunity against some of the residual components on pre-existing stealth-adapted viruses in the patient. So these components would not have normally been seen if it wasn't for the immune stimulation with the adjuvant. And this is consistent with people with the chronic fatigue syndrome being more susceptible to developing this long COVID-19 illness. So you're correct. And I think the major issue is that the idea of immunizing everyone against an illness where 80% or even more do not develop any significant symptoms, if at all, is inefficient. And it is fraught with the problem that the virus can undergo changes, mutations, and so the vaccination program is not going to be reactive with the modified viruses. The major finding from the study with stealth-adapted viruses is that it identified that the body has a very effective non-immunological antivirus defense mechanism. It works against stealth-adapted viruses, but it also works against other viruses. And there are clinical studies, HIV, rotavirus, and many more studies need to be done to activate this non-immunological mechanism. What we know about it is that it's mediated by what I call an alternative cellular energy pathway. And this too goes to the wrong assumption that the only energy we use is the energy obtained from the metabolism of food, the 2,000 calories a day. When one analyzes the work that a typical human does, it's well in the range of 5,000 or more calories. There has to be, and there is, this life force energy, another source of energy that comes into the body that doesn't involve food and mitochondria, but seems to be an environmental force, which we've been studying now for some time, that the body brings in. What's nice is that this alternative cellular energy pathway, or this energy, environmental energy, can be can exist in certain types of activated water, which I now refer to as accelerated water.
Okay, Dr. Martin, we're getting off topic. I want to get back here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. There's a growing number of medical experts now warning that these RNA vaccines will very likely contribute to autoimmune disease. Perhaps my deepest worry is that these COVID-19 vaccine trials and safety follow-ups are so recent most adverse reactions that are reported occur shortly after vaccination, superficial ones, swelling, etc., it is far too premature to make any scientific claim that any of these new vaccines, including the genetically bioengineered adenovirus vector vaccines for COVID, are by any means safe. Autoimmune conditions may require many months, even years, before showing any symptomatic signs. And then by that time, the vaccine as the main causal factor has been given a free pass because so much time has passed. Can you speak about long-term development of an autoimmune illness that can contribute to vaccination? And do you have any idea of the types of autoimmune conditions we might witness due to the RNA COVID vaccine? And finally, if you already have an autoimmune condition, and tens of millions of Americans do, what could this vaccine potentially do to people already suffering from autoimmune conditions?
Gary, I've heard you on many occasions point out the fundamental criticism of the vaccine testing program, the exclusion from the initial studies of people with significant neurological autoimmune type illness. The current COVID-19 vaccines, these individuals are excluded from the safety study, and yet the approval process is comprehensive to include everyone. That is an absolute flaw in the system that has been identified over many years, and I've heard you speak to that in the past. My concern is that the cause of many of the autoimmune diseases you're describing, many of the chronic debilitating illnesses, the illnesses that are impairing brain function in individuals, is because of the stealth adapted viruses. Therefore, I've been focusing on the potential interaction of the vaccine viruses with stealth adapted viruses, and also on the fact that if you stimulate the immune system with adjuvants, you can then trigger immunity against some of these pre-existing stealth adapted viruses. Now, I truly believe that the discussion should be held at a senior scientific level. The difficulty, as I see the process at the moment, is this unwillingness in the FDA and NIH to accept the existence of stealth-adapted viruses. And there's no basis for saying they can't exist. There's so much sequence data to show it. It's so been demonstrated over and over again that these viruses can be isolated from individuals, but that acceptance is taken off the table. And that is, to my mind, shortchanging the adequacy of the safety consideration of these vaccines.
You have hypothesized in your writings, which we have reviewed carefully, that these vaccine-derived stealth viruses may be contributing to the rise of autism and brain disorders and chronic fatigue syndrome. What scientific hard evidence have you uncovered that indicates this?
Two points. The first point I want to make is I approach the issue of viruses and chronic illnesses different from what most virologists would do. And that's primarily because I'm a pathologist. So the criterion that I used was showing that blood samples or samples from the fluid around the brain and even brain biopsies had evidence of viruses that could cause cell damage. Secondarily, I then looked at what they were composed of, finding that they could have these cellular sequences, some bacterial sequences, a new type of virus. Nobody else had taken that approach. Other people had assumed that viruses were clearly distinct from the nucleic acids in the virus, were clearly distinct from the nucleic acids in the cell or in bacteria, and that they could confidently look using known markers of animal and human viruses. they failed to see the viruses that are present in autistic children, people with the chronic fatigue syndrome, people with ALS, a very widespread presence of these viruses. They don't do as much damage to the liver, lung, kidney, because the rest of the organ can easily compensate. The brain doesn't have that ability. And so most of the symptoms caused by these stealth-adapted viruses relate to impaired neurological function. Now, I went from culturing these viruses through a long period beginning around 1990 to 2002, when, because of a description of a study of stealth-adapted viruses in blood donors at the University of California, Irvine, an approved study, we did it, but the suggestion that the blood donors could be transmitting stealth-adapted viruses became intolerable, as it were, for the FDA, and I was actually told that I had put the nation's health in immediate jeopardy.
You put the blood bank, and you put the American Red Cross. You put those who profit from this. That's unfortunate. That's a separate discussion. Real quick, please, for our WBA audience, I'm sorry, but we have to say goodbye at this moment. So they had their last 5 minutes for special material they use. But everyone else, we're continuing this interview to the top of the hour. You can go to prn.fm if you'd like to join us. And just so you understand what my guest is saying, he's saying that even those who donated blood or received blood through a donation, those individuals could have received, as we know, you can get a lot of different viruses, hepatitis, that they frequently screen for, but they can't screen as easily for these others, because if you're not acknowledging they exist, you're not going to screen for them. You're not going to find in the blood what you're not looking for. But remember, this was the person, Dr. Martin, MD, PhD, National Institutes of Health, later at the Food and Drug Administration. He headed the viral oncology department. He's an author of published peer-reviewed literature. He's a renowned scientist. But he is, like George Carlin said, that he didn't fit in. This man's ideas don't fit in with the standard concept. So back to you now. Dr. Martin,
thank you for the nice comments. Again, it's difficult always to get innovative research into the pretty restricted thinking at the FDA, NIH, particularly when there's such a momentum to get these vaccines approved and in widespread use.
I agree. And also, let me ask you the questions, because we don't have but 5 minutes. And by the way, all those decades, the person who had the purse strings and only gave money if you agreed to do research in the direction they were going, the consensus was Anthony Fauci. In any case, we invited British journalist Janine Roberts, one of the greatest journalists in world history, to come to New York. She came, we did a press conference. Now, she's the one who had meetings with one of the manufacturing biologic committees at the FDA, laid out clearly that vaccines derived from cell cultures are highly contaminated with other viruses, pathogens, other DNA, RNA fragments, in some cases even prions. The public is largely completely unaware of just how primitive the manufacturing science is when developing a vaccine. In fact, the FDA gives an allowance for how much contamination is permitted in a vaccine. What is it about your research that federal authorities would not want to support? And do you agree or disagree that vaccines in and of themselves can be toxic, and the adjuvants in particular used in vaccines, such as aluminum or squalene, can contribute in a way to a stealth virus becoming pathogenic?
Absolutely, you put your finger on it. So the focus on the vaccine as a way of provoking immunity against pre-existing stealth virus is very real. And we've seen that now when people, young adolescents having papillomavirus vaccine, when you go back and review their prior history, the child had evidence of having a stealth virus and should have been excluded from receiving a papillomavirus vaccine. The adjuvants can certainly trigger inflammation against some of the minor components left on the stealth viruses. I think the true bottom line is scientifically, it's overwhelming data to say that stealth viruses exist. The position taken by federal authorities is we don't have to do anything. Nobody else has followed your work. And I'm now trying to explain why that is so, that these viruses so clearly exist. And if they're going to do the appropriate, authentic job that we rely on them to do, they should consider stealth adapted viruses. And I think there is an appropriate studies to be done to see if the new COVID-19 vaccines can become incorporated into some of the already described stealth adapted viruses.
We appreciate that. Also, the new viruses were not tested against a placebo, a saline solution. They promised to do something like that, and at the last moment shifted over to doing comparing it to another vaccine. Therefore, in my opinion, a completely fraudulent study. Finally, you're a very humble person. You didn't mention that you're one of the most, you've achieved something that only 100 or less pathologists in the world have ever achieved. You have very high ranking. You're head of a different organization. Would you just briefly, I realize it's a little embarrassing, I apologize for this, but I want to drive home the fact that you know what you're talking about. You've published in peer-reviewed journals, I'd like to know how many articles, but also where your standing is in the field of pathology.
I'm an academic. I mean, I did well in graduating in medicine in Sydney and among the top five, and in fact, in the last year, did the best. I've always had that interest in pursuing new concepts. When I became a pathologist, the decision to stay in this country, I had the opportunity of extending the studies to specialize in immunopathology, and then medical microbiology, like a true nerd. It turns out that altogether, less than 200 people had ever had that subspecialty certification in medical microbiology, and less than 100 pathologists had the qualifications in immunopathology. So I realized that I've taken on the more of an academic role, coming up with interesting concepts. The concept of viruses being able to undergo this stealth adaptation is very exciting. As I said, it has totally expanded my view about viruses.
How many articles have you published in the peer-reviewed literature?
Oh, at least 140 or so. And all of them, the ones that are most interested in regard to this, the idea of stealth adaptation is still not grasped by most virologists and immunologists. The idea that the body has an alternative cellular energy pathway beyond the metabolism of food is very interesting. The nature of that energy is...
Dr. Martin, I'm running into the next program's time. Here's what I'm going to do. I have a lot more questions I would like to ask you. Would you make yourself available for a one-hour interview that we will play on the Progressive Commentary? I can't do it tomorrow because we have Danny Sheehan and Mary Holland on, two of the world's greatest constitutional lawyers, talking about what our rights are going to be and how we have to fight back. But the following Tuesday, I would like to have you on so we can go into greater depth on all this. All right?
Oh, I very much appreciate the opportunity, Gary, and have enormous respect for the role you play in helping disseminate this useful information. There is a website under this nonprofit, mihope.org, And I'm happy to send you some of the more recent articles in preparation for next Tuesday of next week.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. John Martin, MD, PhD, and author of over 150 published articles, academic, head of the FDA's viral oncology laboratory, also had a background in immunopathology and medical microbiology, and did work at the U.S. Public Health Service, etc. New information. We will take it further and try to break it even to more understandable lay language.